We are talking today with Jeff Goodell. Jeff Goodell is a contributing editor at Rolling Stone and a frequent contributor to the New York Times Magazine. He is the author of several books, including Our Story, 77 Hours That Tested Our Friendship and Our Faith, The Cyber Thief and the Samurai, Sunnyvale, The Rise and Fall of a Silicon Valley Family, and he's here to talk about his new book, Big Coal, The Dirty Secret Behind America's Energy Future. Jeff, thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Start out and tell us, what was the motivation behind writing Big Coal?
Well, the motivation came at a particular moment in 2001 when the New York Times Magazine asked me to go to West Virginia and write about mountaintop removal mines, big strip mines in West Virginia. And up until that time, I really had no idea that we burn coal in America. I kind of thought of it as something you read about in Charles Dickens novels. I grew up in Silicon Valley, was very interested in technology and what electrons can do from the rise of the internet. I worked at Apple Computer even briefly, but it never occurred to me where these electrons that we celebrate and all love so much and that are powering our voices now really come from. And when I went to West Virginia in 2001 and I saw these enormous strip mines and I saw the kind of environmental and economic devastation of across wide regions of Appalachia, it really stunned me. And I wrote a story for the New York Times Magazine about this. But I really realized that that was just kind of touching the surface of what our coal dependency is really about, and that half of our electric power comes from coal in America. And so I thought that I would explore this subject more, and I spent the next 3 years working on this book.
So maybe you can expand on exactly where our electricity does come from. You just said about half of it comes from coal.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the primary source of electricity for America. I mean, we have natural gas also in Washington State. Primarily, I think two-thirds or close to two-thirds is hydroelectric. And there's, of course, some nuclear and a small percentage of renewable energy like wind and even a smaller percentage of solar. But the real workhorse for electricity in America is coal.
So if one listens to the current administration in the White House, you get the impression that coal is a good thing. It's what's going to save us from our dependency on oil overseas and take us into the next couple centuries. What's the problem with that?
Well, there's a lot of problems with that. To begin with, the problem with that is that that view of our America's energy situation is grossly simplified and is built upon the idea that all we have to do is keep finding new sources of energy and keep consuming. In fact, America is facing two profound problems with energy, and one is we're coming to the end of the fossil fuel era, the cheap fossil fuel era. You can argue about how much oil and gas is left in the Middle East, but the end of cheap oil and gas is over. And with the rise of China and their increasing demand, the days when we could just think about consuming to our heart's content and really not worrying about it are gone. And the other big issue that we're facing with energy is global warming. And the science is getting clearer and clearer on it. The urgency is getting more and more clear. And, we need to take action on that. And that's going to drive a lot of energy policy in the future. The problem with coal is that, certainly from a climate point of view, it's a disaster. Coal is by far the most carbon-intensive fossil fuel. A single coal plant a new coal plant that's going up in Illinois that I write about in my book, will emit about as much carbon dioxide as every car built by the Ford Motor Company this year. That gives you an idea of the scale of the carbon dioxide emissions. So if you take global warming at all seriously, this idea that we just have a lot of coal and we should just burn it is a disaster for the climate. But it's also a problem because coal can't really replace oil and gas, at least not in a sort of simple way. There are ways of transforming coal into diesel fuel, and that can help to displace some oil consumption in America. But these plants are enormously expensive. They are a step backwards as far as carbon dioxide emissions. And so it doesn't really help us with, the peak oil problem. So coal is not going to save us from dealing with the end of cheap oil and gas, and the industry likes to pretend that it will and to exploit this idea of energy independence. But in fact, that's more of an ad slogan than anything.
Well, let's go into a little more detail on the environmental problems with coal, maybe starting with the pollutant factors. I mean, everybody can see if you're near a coal facility, you know, enormous smokestacks and nasty black smoke coming out.
Well, it's interesting. That's what we think about when we think of being near a coal plant. But in fact, there isn't nasty black smoke coming out. There were laws passed in the 70s and 80s that regulate what they call the opacity of what's coming out of the stack, so that essentially you're not allowed to be able to see it. And that was a good thing in many ways, but it also gives this illusion that if you look at a coal plant today, you don't see anything coming out. You see steam coming from the coolers if it's a really big coal plant. But out of the actual smokestacks of the plant, unless there's something wrong, or unless it's some of the particularly old and dirty plants, you can still see stuff. But mostly you can't see anything. And that gives a lot of people the idea that it's safe and it's clean. And in fact, it's not. And in fact, they emit tremendous amounts of pollutants, but they're just essentially invisible. That doesn't mean that they don't create visible smog later, but what's coming out of the stacks itself at that moment is not black anymore. The coal plants have gotten a lot cleaner, and the coal industry gets credit for that, and they take a lot of credit for that. Traditional pollutants are down 35% since 1970, which is a really good thing. But the problem is with this idea that, you know, coal is clean from the air pollution point of view, not even mentioning the problems of mining, is that this description only fits from a sort of 1970s smog-producing pollutants point of view. So if you look at the things that were regulated in 1970, like sulfur dioxide and nitrogen oxide, the main constituents of smog and acid rain, there's improvement. But if you look at the things that we're really starting to care about now, like mercury, which is a big problem, almost I think every state now in the nation has fish consumption warnings on their fish that come out of their rivers and lakes. Coal is by far the largest emitter of mercury in America. The real big kahuna, though, is carbon dioxide. Just since 1990, carbon dioxide emissions from coal plants are up 27%. Huge amount. In America, in general, they're only up 16%. So you can see the coal plant escalation is going even faster than the general emissions of carbon dioxide in the population. So this idea that coal is clean is really only true from the most narrow point of view. And the other thing that it's important to say is that, you know, according to the American Lung Association, who's looked into this exhaustively and has looked at a lot of studies that have been done by Harvard and other very established institutions and scientists who work for them, air pollution from coal-fired power plants still cause the premature deaths of 24,000 people a year. And that's huge. That's a very big number, and it's caused by particulate pollution, which can trigger heart attacks and other problems, especially in older people, in young people, can not cause but trigger asthma attacks. There's a lot of health effects of these coal plants that are still being explored.
So where does the increase since 1990 of the 27% and the 16% here in the States, is that because there's more plants, or what contributes to that?
Not so much because there's more plants. There's a lot of plants being permitted and constructed right now, but there really haven't been only a handful of new coal plants built since 1975 or so, because coal was seen as sort of going out and the future was going to be natural gas. The main reason for this big increase is that they're running the coal plants a lot harder, and they are really burning them, and they're doing that because they're making a heck of a lot of money by doing that. And so this increase in carbon dioxide is essentially a result of profit-seeking by the electric power industry.
Talk about some of the other byproducts of coal plants. I understand they crank out a lot of ash.
They do. That's something that is not talked about very much, but is actually being studied right now by the National Academy of Sciences, and people especially in Appalachia, Ohio, Illinois, places like that, are very concerned about. Coal plants are just like a fireplace, essentially. And at the end of the day, after you burn your fire, you have a bunch of ash at the bottom. And coal plants are like that, except they have millions of tons of this ash. And they also have a lot of what's called scrubber sludge, the stuff that you put a scrubber on a coal plant to get rid of the pollutants, but then it doesn't just magically make the pollutants disappear. It turns into this, it takes them out of the stack gases, but turns it into this sludge that then has to be dealt with somehow. And some companies are really good at trying to recycle some of this stuff. They use it for wallboard. I visited a plant in Pennsylvania where there's a wallboard, you know, sheetrock factory right next to it, and they're essentially using it for sheetrock. And that's great. The problem is this is only done in a few places and is not really widespread at all. So this sludge and this ash is dumped into giant ponds, pumped into abandoned mines, piled up places. You know, it's waste. It's junk. It's garbage. And it's not only waste, it's toxic in the sense that it has laced with heavy metals, mercury, arsenic, things like that. And the problem is that it begins, especially in these big impoundments where they dump it, it leaches into the groundwater and can poison the groundwater in various regions, in the regions near where these impoundments are. And people are really beginning to get concerned about this. It's kind of an unexplored problem with the coal industry that is just now beginning to be looked at seriously.
Would it be safe to say that it's a concentrated form of these pollutants, more concentrated than the original product that it came from?
You know, like so that, more concentrated than coal itself?
Yeah, in terms of its toxicity.
I don't know about whether how the concentration per se would compare, but what I do know is that it's mobile. Coal is set, you know, it is fixed in essentially a sedimentary rock, and it's not loose. In the ash and waste, it's soluble. It's ash, and so it sort of dissolves more easily and can be moved around more easily in water and other means. And so, therefore, you know, can be much more widely dispersed. I mean, coal, you know, is full of complicated, ugly stuff, but it sits in the ground if you don't. I mean, it doesn't move anywhere if you leave it buried. It's just a rock, you know. And the percentages of this stuff, of the mercury and arsenic and cadmium and things, can be pretty small. It's not like it's you know, nuclear waste or something like that. But over years, with leaching into aquifers, without, you know, being checked and things like that, it can cause real problems.
All right. Any other pollutants from the facilities themselves?
I mean, the air pollution is obviously the big thing, and the carbon dioxide. And then the combustion wastes from the plants themselves. And the only other, you know, if to go into detail about the environmental issues connected with burning coal, beyond the combustion wastes and the air pollution, the other one is water consumption. It's a big problem, especially in the West, in Wyoming and Montana, where there's a lot of coal, and they want to build a lot of coal plants, especially Wyoming, well, both states. But right now, Wyoming is in the lead in trying to sort of industrialize its coal fields. They're tired of sending coal out on trains, and they want to basically build power plants there and send it over wires to places like Washington and California and Oregon and other places that are growing fast and need power. But these coal plants consume a lot of water for cooling. They have to circulate water through and for cooling. And in places like Wyoming, where it has a lot of water problems already in the sense of you know, droughts, and there's just not a lot of water sitting around, this is a real tough environmental trade-off. You know, you're generating power, but you're also consuming, you know, millions of gallons of water and circulating it through. And that's, again, a big issue that I think is going to hold back some of the development that the industry would like to see in the West.
Does it taint the water at all, like it does, like the nuclear facilities' use of water?
No, but it heats it up, and you know, you can't just circulate it through. I mean, you can, but it doesn't usually taint the water because it's just used through the cooling pipes. But you know, you have then water that's coming in at, you know, whatever the degrees are, and it's going out much warmer. And they can build cooling towers, and I know that there is some loss due to evaporation. I don't know how large the loss is, but it's not negligible. There is a significant amount of water loss due to evaporation with the cooling towers. You know, and there's ways of building power plants that don't use much water. There's technology that can do that, but the problem is that reduces the efficiency of the plants because of the special technology needed. And so it makes the coal plants much less efficient and much sort of more expensive, and they don't like to do that.
Another significant environmental impact from coal is the process of extracting it. Can you talk about that?
Well, the process, you know, I mean, that's just, you know, that was like I said in the beginning of this interview, that's what really first opened my eyes to coal and to what the real cost of it is. In places like Wyoming, in the Powder River Basin, in the northeastern corner of the state, I went to big coal mines there. They're big open pit coal mines. There's really essentially nobody living out there. It's on the prairies. And, you know, it's hard to really have problems with what's going on there environmentally. I mean, I know that there's water loss and all that, but those kind of mines out there are relatively benign. No one's living there. They reconstruct the prairie, you know, pretty well. The companies that are out there are big corporations that are pretty increasingly in the recent years more responsible about how they restore the land and stuff. And I don't really have much environmental issue with what's going on in as far as the mining goes in places like Wyoming. In Appalachia, it's a whole different story. In Appalachia, it's, you know, we're turning southern West Virginia and Kentucky and parts of Pennsylvania and Ohio into these sort of national sacrifice zones for our energy gluttony. Because of the discovery of lots of cheap coal in Wyoming, to compete, Appalachia's had to figure out a cheaper way to get this stuff out of the ground. So unless they have to, they don't like to open underground mines. Their preferred method is to just blow up the mountain. And so they use tremendous amount of ammonium nitrate, a kind of explosive, the same, a much more kind of refined version of what Timothy McVeigh used in Oklahoma City, to essentially blow up the mountain. And then they just dump the rubble from the mountain into stream beds and things and then expose the coal seams and dig the coal out. And this, of course, flattens the mountains and destroys communities nearby and, more importantly, buries. Right now there's been 1,000 miles of streams buried or destroyed in Appalachia from coal mining, and so it's really disrupting the whole water supply for the region. And, you know, the communities that are around that are just being, you know, devastated. And it's hard to get a grasp on what's really going on because of the topography of West Virginia and Appalachia is rolling hills, and there's no real vista points. It's not like the Cascades or the Sierra Nevada where you can stand on a rock and see the whole range or something. It's very difficult to get that. But when I was there, I was able to get rent a private plane and had someone fly me around at a low altitude, and it was just stunning to see, you know, these thousands of acres, these mines that cover thousands of acres, just leveling the state, and it's really shocking.
Yeah, I've heard descriptions that it's just like a giant war zone.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you just imagine a mountain, you know, a couple thousand feet. The mountains in Appalachia aren't as big as the mountains in the West, but you know, they just essentially level them, and the coal industry likes to talk about how they can be reclaimed and turned into golf courses and things like that. And it's quite hilarious because they've done like one or two as sort of models, and they bring all the journalists out there and show these pretty golf courses that, you know, the coal executives play on. And of course, anybody who lives in the coal country can't really afford to golf because they have no money because the economy is so bad there. But, you know, they have a few models that they show people where they can use these reclaimed areas. But once you get away from the showpiece reclamation, what you see is just this, it looks just like a, you know, just like a, you've seen a dump. When they're done with the dump, they just like have a bunch of flat dirt. They kind of vaguely sometimes shape into mounds, and they throw grass seed on it and they move on. I mean, they only want to reclaim as much as the law absolutely insists that they do, because coal is a commodity business, and especially in Appalachia where the coal is getting harder and harder to get, and the prices are going up of all kinds of things like fuels, and it's just, they're really in a pinch in the marketplace, and so they're really interested in getting it out as cheaply and quickly as possible and moving on. So they don't really want to mess with this, with reclamation and things, you know, only to the degree that the law requires them to.
Talk a little bit about the jobs themselves. Was the tragedy in West Virginia that we all saw in the papers recently, is that pretty typical of operations in that area?
You know, coal mining has gotten a lot safer than it used to be. The Mine Safety Act in 1969, after a big explosion that killed several hundred miners, really improved safety in the mines quite a bit. And the safety record has gotten better in the coal industry, partly because of this shifting to these big mountaintop removal mines, and which are environmentally devastating, but from a human point of view, they're much safer. And they also require much less man hours because you don't have a guy underground, you know, shoveling coal out, essentially. But unfortunately, what's going on right now is that because of this boom in coal, a lot of small operators, especially in, particularly in Appalachia, are opening up smallish mines, small mines, you know, in coal that was either too deeply buried or too geologically complex to go after before. But now that coal prices are skyrocketing, it's profitable to go after them. So a lot of miners are being put into going after this coal that is really dangerous to go after. And there's been, you know, significant rollbacks in enforcement under the Bush administration and the Mine Safety and Health Administration, which is the Department of Labor that oversees mine safety, cuts in federal inspectors and things like that, some negligible fines, a lot of which came out in the news after these deaths. But the real problem for coal miners who work in these deep coal mines is that unions are gone, essentially, from these mines, and they are put in the very difficult position of, it's almost all male, all men mostly, most of them have families, most of them have lived in Appalachia for a long time, and they love where they live, and they have deep connections to their family, and they need to support their family, so they need a good paying job, and coal, even though the small, more dangerous mines pay less than the safer, bigger mines, they still are the best paying jobs. So people will go to, the guys will go to work in them. And some of the guys, I mean, there are a lot of people who really like the work. It's not that they don't like the work, but if they see something dangerous, the problem is that they know if they say anything about it, they're fired. And there's just no way around that. And so they're in the situation, put into these situations where they see things that are wrong, that are dangerous, that they don't like, but they go back in because they need to feed their families and they don't want to end up stocking yo-yos at Walmart. So you have essentially no one looking out for the safety of these guys, and they're not even able to speak for themselves. And that's why we're seeing these deaths, the increase in deaths this year.
So is this a industry that basically could be cleaned up, so to speak, with technology? Make it sound like, you know, if we just start pursuing some of these higher-end techniques for or on the facilities themselves, that it'll all be clean and things will be fine.
Well, that's the central message that the coal industry wants to get out right now. They want us to all think that there's new technology just around the corner that will solve all of these problems. They have a particular name for this new technology. They call it FutureGen. It's a big demonstration coal plant that a partnership of big coal players along with the Department of Energy are funding. It's going to cost $1 billion. And it's supposedly going to turn coal into hydrogen and it will have what they call a zero-emission coal plant. They will have essentially zero emissions coming out of the stacks. The carbon dioxide, which is the main concern for the coal industry right now, will be captured and sequestered underground with a technique called geologic sequestration, where it's essentially buried in fissures underground and then capped with concrete caps and locked in there supposedly for a very long time. So they want us to believe that the coal is have a viable future and that, you know, all this stuff can be solved. And, you know, the coal industry loves new technology as long as it's always 10 years away and as long as it's stuff that they don't have to build tomorrow. Within the industry itself, the many cynics talk about FutureGen, they call it NeverGen. What it really is a sort of political decoy in the same way that, you know, General Motors will tout hydrogen cars while they're building zillions of SUVs. And that's essentially what's going on with coal. There is new technology. It's a coal gasification. It's called integrated gasification combined cycle. It's much, much cleaner. It's a different way. It doesn't actually burn coal. It uses heat and pressure to gasify coal and create a synthetic gas from the coal, which is then burned in a conventional gas turbine. It's a much more efficient technology with less water, all kinds of things. And it also, most importantly, allows the carbon dioxide to be captured from the plant and then sequestered underground. And these plants are up. There's three of them in the United States. There's a number of them around the world. The technology is working. They could be built tomorrow, but they're not. And the industry doesn't want to build them and is dragging their feet about adopting this technology and saying, we need to wait for future gen, you know, 10 or 15 years away. So the industry loves new technology, but they just, as long as it's not new technology, they have to build now, as long as they can wait for somebody else to build it. If we were just talking about, you know, the next version of the iPod or something, that would, you know, be not a, such a big deal, you know. So, okay, we'll wait for the future gen iPod. But the problem is this is energy, and, you know, America's in a real crisis about this. And if we don't have 10 years to wait before we begin solving global warming and thinking about reducing emissions, I mean, James Hansen just last year, James Hansen, who's the kind of godfather of climate science, who works at NASA and you know, is esteemed a scientist as we have in America, said essentially we have 10 years to begin, you know, dealing with carbon dioxide emissions, cutting them, and that by the year 2050 we need to cut them by 50 to 70% from today if we're going to have a chance of preventing what he describes as abrupt climate change, which means, you know, massive problems like melting of the Greenland ice sheets, shutdown of the ocean circulatory system, things like that. And these coal plants fly right in the face of that, and they essentially are mortgaging our future and our kids' future in order to profit for today.
So what do you see that we as citizens have to do?
Well, I think that we as citizens have to do what citizens in Seattle are doing, you know, supporting politicians who are pushing for to address global warming and to begin to push for things like these renewable portfolio standards. Mayor Nichols is, you know, pledging that Seattle will kind of live by the Kyoto Protocol standards, reduce emissions. And I think what we as citizens need to do is to see through this, what I call the myth of economic peril that the industry likes to propagate, that, you know, if we address this at all, you know, our power prices are going to go up, you know, 3 cents or something like that, and the economy is going to decline, and the poor people in the emergency rooms, the lights are going to go off in the emergency rooms, and people are going to die, and America is going to just, you know, collapse if we dare change the way we think about energy. And, you know, that's just not true. I mean, it's the same myth that we hear every time any kind of new law or new regulation comes along. And, you know, and I also think that we as Americans have to take responsibility for what goes on behind the light switch, for not pretending that electricity is something that flows down from a golden bowl in the sky, that it has real costs and consequences, and that when someone tells us, you know, we might have to pay a little bit more for cleaner power, you know, we say okay, because we have other things that, you know, we care about, like, you know, whether the climate's going to be, you know, enable our kids to live happy lives here. And, you know, I think that we as Americans have not even begun to face this ourselves. And you know, this book is about the coal industry, but it's really about us and about denial on our part and the way the industry helps us along in this denial and, you know, muddies the science and keeps us from knowing what the true cost of a kilowatt of power is or where it really comes from, and, you know, focus groups, all these clever slogans like clean coal and all that. But really, it comes down to us. I mean, we, you know, and Americans are really spoiled, and we don't want to change our ways of life, anything. You know, I live in upstate New York in a small town, and since I've been writing this book, you know, I walk around in the evening and take my dog for a walk, and, you know, I'll see people's, like, lights on lighting up their trees outside, and it'll be 65 degrees, and people will be blasting their air conditioners. And, I mean, the idea that, you know, any kind of efficiency or cutting back on our consumption is going to lead to sort of Jimmy Carter land is just a silly myth. And, there's so many easy ways of dealing with this if we would just get serious about it. I mean, we can see it with companies, corporations like DuPont are doing that, you know, cutting emissions, carbon dioxide emissions by 50% and profiting from it and seeing it as a good thing and not at all hurting their growth, their profits. You know, and I think that's what's happening in places like Silicon Valley that are really beginning to invest a lot of money, venture capital, in these new green technologies and stuff. And I think that, you know, we're beginning to see that, but, you know, we still are living with our eyes closed about energy.
All right. Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. I want to thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
We have just been talking with Jeff Goodell. He is author of the new book, Big Coal: The Dirty Secret Behind America's Energy Future.